You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses. iWoka.co.uk.
Dan, well, it was hard, of course, at the start of the tour, but you seem to be improving every day, mostly, and today is the big day.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, yes, I didn't have very good legs after the rest day, but today's a much better stage for me, and we'll see what we can do. You know, it's very, very hot, and it's the third week, but the climbs, we haven't really hit any climbs of this difficulty yet. It's 1 hour long, you know, and the Madeleine is a horrible climb, to be honest. It's very steep for long periods, and there's no respite. And then the last climb, obviously, I don't know it. I know the road up until Merribel that we did in 2016, but the last part is a bit of an unknown, and obviously nobody's raced up there. So even if you've done a recon, it's still very different when you're racing. So the altitude is going to play a big part as well. I think if you make an attack, you could really pay for it afterwards. So yeah, it's going to be a very tactical battle for the stage victory and for the GC guys, but. Yeah, I just hope we come out of it well.
Well, we opened tonight with Dan Martin. You were speaking to him at the start this morning, Francois. He was to play quite an active part in the stage, but also quite prescient in talking about the impact today of the altitude and the length of the climb.
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, it was good to have some insight from a rider, an experienced rider and an excellent climber like Dan, even if, you know, he's had problems in the beginning of the tour, as he said. Because we really didn't know what to expect, and I guess a lot of riders didn't know what to expect either. Even, you know, of course, most team and most of them had checked the course. Not all of them, actually, but still, you know, checking the course and, you know, climbing it in the third week of the Tour de France after climbing the Madeleine in the first part of the stage was probably a very hard call for many, many riders. As we saw, I mean, Tadej Pogacar, who is now actually the best climber in this Tour de France, struggle. You could see on the faces of every rider in the peloton that it was unusual. Probably some guys were saying one of the hardest climbs, you know, that ever climbed on the Tour de France. More like some of the climbs in the Giro or sometimes in the Vuelta with that kind of declivity. But yeah, so well to hear from Dan Martin and to see him, you know, straight away a few minutes afterwards was interesting. And well, we expected the big showdown in the mountains today, in the real, the almost the only, you know, high altitude stage in the Tour de France. Well, we got what we bargained for.
We did. We saw quite a thrilling finish, certainly, to the stage, and an intriguing stage. If you hear a bit of rumbling, it's Lionel's stomach. We're in the mountains where we've got Patrick Lefebvre at the next table.
We have.
We do.
Well, do you think we can get him on the podcast?
Ask him about whether Sam Bennett's going to take the green jersey to Paris.
Well, I'd probably say yes to that.
He's probably expecting him to now, isn't he?
Yeah, well, Lionel, here we are in our mountain hideaway. We're in the sort of next valley over from Merribel, and it's a lovely place that we're in. The menu tonight offers, there's a surprise option. So you can go a la carte, or you can go for a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8-course surprise.
Wow.
Yeah, so Francois and I had a little word with the chef earlier, didn't we? And yeah, said that our friend was a big fan of Andouillette.
Well, my surprise is like 8 courses of Andouillette.
Yeah, right? we couldn't disclose the fact that with all the money we get, you know, thanks to the friends of the podcast, we can afford to eat at La Buite tonight. I mean, it's a... Yeah, well,
oh, you're giving it away.
Why not say, you know, facts? I mean, that it's, you know, we don't do that often, but
Francois, I've got news for you. Tonight is on you. You're spending your panini money tonight.
Well, I'll tell you what, why not? You know,
options were very limited in Merribel. We were going to stay with a friend of ours, actually. Charlotte was going to be moving to Merribel. Sadly, that has temporarily fallen through, so we had to make different arrangements, and here we are. It's not typical. But we'll report back on
this. And this place, La Buite, is run by a family. I mean, the father and the son are, you know, among the best mountain chefs in France, and they're called Meilleur. like best, you know. And well, we'll see there if they're really the best.
We were in here no more than 5 minutes before Lionel had his toweling dressing gown on. I said Daniel there because we were sharing with Daniel Freib last night, television's Daniel Freib. And I thought of Daniel a lot today as I saw Superman fly up the climb. Have you got the tale of the tap for us, please, Lionel?
Indeed, Richard. Yes, stage 17, where we set out from Grenoble this morning without Egan Bernal, the defending champion. The news broke very early this morning that he would not be starting stage 17. I said in last night's podcast that he'd made the comment at the finish in the TV interviews that he wanted to finish the tour. The subtext to that was me thinking that he possibly wouldn't start today. I just didn't want to speculate on that. But Bernal, with his back and knee issues, is out of the Tour de France. Another non-starter this morning, Stefan Kung of Groupama FDJ.
Well, he said he wasn't going to. He said that a long time ago, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that's to prepare for the World Time Trial Championships, we think, which were going to be on home soil for him in Switzerland, but it will now be in Italy, of course, next week. Oh, strange. In a week's time, we'll be thinking about the World Championship.
Wow. Oh, flash that was a
very
big bolt of lightning.
Lightning there. I hope that's not close. I'm sitting furthest out into the mountains.
That's deliberate.
Anyway, the stage got off to a rapid start. Thomas De Gendt was the first rider to open up the aggression. And there was a big... That's Thomas De Gendt attacking.
Wow, Lionel. Don't worry, the food's coming soon.
Then there was a big group, and out of that big group came Julian Alaphilippe, Richard Carapaz, Gorka Izagirre, Lennard Kamner, yesterday's stage winner, and Dan Martin.
I thought I was reading about yesterday's stage when I saw who was in the break.
Yeah, very similar, wasn't it? And those five got away, and they built an advantage of about 6 minutes before they started the climb of the Col de la Madeleine. Carapaz was first to the top of the Madeleine for Ineos, you know, obviously seeking to make amends for their GC hopes going up in smoke. Kamner had been dropped before that, so his legs obviously still a bit sore from yesterday. And behind in the GC group, Bahrain McLaren were setting all of the pace, looking very strong. Dan Martin got dropped from the lead group on the descent, and then we had the Valley Road before the climb up to Méribel, and then obviously the final bit up to the Col de la Loze. Alaphilippe was—he tried to go away, but then was caught by Carapaz and Izagirre, and for a while those three were together. And one by one, they dropped off, leaving Carapaz alone in the front. When they came onto the Col de la Loze and the road narrowed and steepened, we saw Bahrain McLaren still on the front. The question was, you know, were they saving Jumbo-Visma from doing all of the legwork? The problem was that as the road got steeper, first Tom Dumoulin of Jumbo-Visma dropped off, and then really the first of the GC riders to crack was Mikel Landa of Bahrain McLaren, unfortunately. Rigoberto Urán also went backwards at that point, and then Miguel Angel Lopez...
Hang on.
Are we going to pick up on
Did
that
he go
every
backwards?
Time? No, he didn't go backwards, Richard. He went forwards just more slowly than the others. Then Miguel Angel Lopez, Superman, took flight. He accelerated, and that distanced Adam Yates, Enrico Mas, Richie Porte, and it left just the cream, really, of the Tour de France. Lopez, the yellow jersey, Primoz Roglic, Tadej Pogacar, and Sepp Kuss. And then really, well, we'll talk about how the stage played out at the finish, but Lopez looked really impressive and has moved himself up onto the podium with that stage win. He's in third place now. Then Roglic turned the screw in the very last part of the climb, and there was this fascinating slow-motion chase between Rog and Pog. Pog almost got on terms, didn't he? But you just saw how the time gap of a 50-metre gap...
Roglic
was.
Wobbled, I thought. I there was a moment where I thought, he's cracked, but he found something again, and it was fascinating.
If it had been 200 metres further, it might have been a very different story, but it was a surprise seeing how small the gap was on the road to then see in the results it was 15 seconds. So obviously with a little bit of time bonus as well, Roglic has tightened the screw in the GC. He now leads Pogacar by 57 seconds. As I say, Lopez up into third place. Porte, Yates are fourth and fifth. Urán slips down to sixth. Landa stays in seventh. Sam Bennett is still
up
in the green
ninth.
Jersey. Now, that would be a surprise.
I'm just trying to curry favour with our neighbour.
Well, actually extended his lead in the green jersey competition over Sagan and Trentin by a couple of points at the intermediate sprint, and they made it comfortably inside the time limit. I say comfortably, it probably wasn't terribly comfortable, but it wasn't, the clock wasn't ticking for them. Only one rider outside the time limit, and that was
Jens
de Boucher of B&B Hotels.
Yeah, he helped, you know, he really helped Brian Coquard make the cut. And at the finish, Coquard was in tears, you know, crawling almost, you know. I mean, it was for some of these guys, it was, you know, it was a real nightmare going up there. And not only the guys fighting for victory, but as often is the case.
Well, if Coquard gets a stage win either on Friday or on the Champs-Élysées, that sacrifice will have definitely been worth it. The King of the Mountains jersey has changed shoulders at last. Benoit Cosnefroid's long run in polka dots has come to an end. He's held it since stage two. Tadej Pogacar is
the
King of the Mountains. 66 points. Roglic 3 points back, and Miguel Angel Lopez on 51 points. And I guess that competition will, well, it's still alive, isn't it? We'll see what happens tomorrow. But the question is, has Roglic done enough there to win the Tour?
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns, and scaling new height with iWalker. If you run a small business, find out more at iwoca.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
My name's Karen G, and I am the Go Ride coordinator for the junior part of Kendal Cycle Club. So we've got a group called Bike Buddies for the very young children. They can start as soon as they're able to either ride a balance bike or a pedal bike. When they get to an age where they've started school and they've been at school for a couple of terms, they can move up into the more formal coaching, the Go Ride. And then we take them all the way through into their teenage years, really. The club is really welcoming to women, and cycling is a major part of my life. And I would have said to you, I am not a club cyclist at all. I was actually too scared to go on a club ride. And the moment I went on one, it was just incredible. Everybody was so welcoming. There's women's only groups. I've made lots of friends. I've done the coast to coast from Edinburgh to Kendal, and I've cycled the north to south route through Wales, which I never thought I would be able to do, and all of those are organised just with women. It's just been incredible.
Thanks very much indeed to iWalker, our title sponsor, and we heard there from Karen G from Kendal Cycle Club. iWalker sponsor Kendal Cycle Club as well. They're very into their cycling, lots of their employees cycle. They support cycling and they support us, and we're very grateful to them. If you run a small business, go to iwoca.co.uk, iwoca.co.uk, and you'll find lots of information about how they can help you. Our neighbour's not taking notes, is he, at this point, Lionel, thinking that might be tapping them up for sponsorship.
What do you mean there'll be iWalker Quick Step next year?
Oh, more lightning. Before we crack on with discussing what was a great stage, I think, and a fantastic finish, and what a climb that is, what a discovery. The one blight being the behaviour of some of the fans, I thought. Crowds were a bit unruly. President Macron was in the car today. He can't have been impressed by what we saw on the television with fans getting very close to riders without wearing masks. That was disappointing.
As our good friend Julien Preto from Reuters pointed out, that the guys running alongside the riders are also the guys without a mask.
Yeah.
Well, look, they're namely idiots, you know?
I mean, if it was a football match, you would use CCTV to get them and ban them from attending football matches. It's hard to do that with bike races. But, yeah, it's the same people. The vast majority were standing respectfully back and wearing masks, and it's a few idiots who get in the rider's way, want to get on TV themselves, and invariably weren't wearing masks. And it's just the running of the event is at stake, and you know, it's just so irresponsible and stupid and very disappointing to see. Before we go on, I want to tell a story that I've been meaning to tell for a few nights. An intriguing tale reaches us about Pierre Roland. Now, he has been in a lot of breakaways this Tour de France. He wasn't in a breakaway today, but he's been in a lot of breakaways. And I'm told that he, a few years ago, I can't find that out from my source what year it was, but apparently he incurred the wrath of Chris Froome. I think he may have attacked when Froome stopped for a pee or something like that. And Froome, they fell out, and Froome told him, you will never be in a breakaway for as long as I'm riding the Tour de France. And so he hasn't been in any breakaways the last few years. He hasn't always ridden it, admittedly. He didn't ride last year, but we have seen him in a lot of breaks this year, and I imagine him just sort of sticking two fingers up at Chris Froome every time he's up the road.
Thinking that Froome's watching on telly.
Yeah. Maybe it's some kind of message.
Is that the closest Chris Froome gets to being sort of Bernardino, Eno, badger-like? I mean, what kind of animal would Chris Froome be? He's not really a badger, is he? The badger, it was all about being at his most dangerous when cornered, right?
So. Yeah, absolutely. And well, it's funny about Roland because I mean, there's a very famous phrase in French cycling, is attaque de Pierre Roland, because he attacks all the time. But apparently, he doesn't attack when Chris Froome is in a race. And, well, there you are.
I just reading a quote here from Richie Port about today. And, you know, we watch the race and we see for the first time that leading group really break apart. And we'll get on to Mikel Landa a little bit later. But this quote from Richie Port is interesting. He said, to be honest, there are climbs in cycling like the Zoncolan that are absolutely brutal, but today, with the final at altitude, I could barely pedal my bike. With 500 metres to go, I couldn't stand up. Everybody went super deep. It was a hard day. You know, I think today, he said it was a fist fight, to be honest. It was every man for himself. Sepp Kuss was there for Roglic, but at the end of the day, there was nothing really teammates could do to help. You know, that really sort of lays bare what today was.
That's a great point, because if you look, I mean, I made myself a reflection, as you say, we'll get back to the teamwork today because it was interesting, but the guy who won the stage was one of the guys without the team in all of the finale, where we saw, you know, Baron McLaren leading the way to no effect. We saw Jumbo-Visma doing their usual teamwork, well, to no effect, except for Roglic to increase his lead, but he didn't win the stage. We saw even UAE Team Emirates, David de la Cruz, leading the way for Pogacar at one stage. But and the guy without a teammate, Miguel Angel Lopez, won the stage. And you start wondering when you saw Pogacar winning stages in the Pyrenees, and now we see Lopez winning, whether it's really a plus to have a team with you in such certain, you know, such hard climbs and when the pace is so high. I don't know. I mean, you know, kind of lead out mountain trains don't seem to work that well in this Tour de France.
Yeah, just to pick up on Richie Port's point, Richard, I don't want to give you credit for somebody else's insight, but the Col de la Loze, 2,304 metres, if you think of the sort of three steepest climbs, the kind of novelty steep climbs of the Giro and the Vuelta, the Zoncolan is at 1,750 metres, the Mortirolo is at 1,852, and the Angliru, which is probably the steepest of those three, I think, but only goes up to 1,570 metres. So it's significantly higher, and combined with the steepness of the road, it became a boxing match, really, didn't it? It was just, you know, one pedal rev after the other. We saw even Roglic, you know, hunched over the bars in those final 500 metres. I suppose the cruelest thing about it was those little dips that then, you know, would have given a brief moment of respite, but it did make for some really fascinating racing. I mean, it was, again, it was a kind of a slow motion pursuit up there. And I know the riders in the past have sometimes complained that this kind of slow motion racing doesn't make them look their best, but I thought it was a fantastic spectacle. And hats off to Miguel Angel Lopez, because of all of his, he's won two stages in the Vuelta back in 2017, and he's been kind of there and thereabouts in the Grand Tours, on the podium in the Vuelta in 2018 and in the Giro in 2018. But he's set fair to finish on the podium here in the Tour de France, and he's got a stage win, testimony to his strength and the race he's ridden so far.
Those top three look reasonably secure now on the podium, really. There's a bit of daylight open up back to Richie Port in fourth, you know, 2 minutes, a minute and a half between Lopez and Port, and it's difficult to see how he closes that. But, you know, the guy and the team that really went all out today to try and shake things up were Barry McLaren and Mikel Landa. I can see a lot of people mocking Landa, because after all that work to set him up, he wasn't able to deliver the final blow. But I thought they showed real ambition, and I think we should applaud that. And one of the things I've actually really enjoyed and about watching this tour has been teams having real ambition, you know, and somewhere we saw them try several times to win a stage and eventually they did and then they won another one. But today, I mean, it had Rod Ellingworth stamped all over it, that effort. It's one of those things, he used to get his teams to do that almost as if the failure would be a more valuable lesson than the success. And he's trying to build something there. It was also effective in, you know, it reduced Roglic's support riders quite a lot of them. I was watching it at one point. Robert Hessink, who's been an absolute powerhouse, was swinging. And he went pretty early. And some of the others went pretty early as well.
George Bennett
went pretty early. They went hard and they went long. And it was a very impressive display by the team. But more than that, you know, you've spoken, Francois, about Jumbo-Visma have ridden with that sort of authority from the start. And it's a statement. And it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And making an investment like that in your team leader in order to try and create this kind of idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy, that Landa would be buoyed by that, would be motivated by that, and would then be able to deliver. He didn't know, and his team didn't know, whether or not in the end he would have the legs, and he didn't. But I think they should be applauded for trying.
Well, when you think of Bahrain McLaren, I mean, he lost Rafael Valls on the first day, really. I mean, he crashed and didn't start stage two. Wout Poels also crashed at the start of the tour and has been struggling. I think that what was interesting was this might be one of those days when Bahrain McLaren sign and somebody else, or, you know, something else happens a year, 2 years down the line, we might look back on a day like today as being the sort of the seed being planted at the beginning of some kind of journey, a bit like looking back at Jumbo-Visma and saying the genesis of this whole journey was Roglic winning the time trial in the Giro a few years back. They all committed to a plan. It was clear what the plan was. Now, you can debate the tactical sense of that plan. Were they just saving Jumbo-Visma a really hard day? But as you say, they did make it hard for half of the Jumbo-Visma team. And the way they committed with Sonny Colbrelli, even on the first climb, we saw Wout Poels do an enormous turn. We saw Peo Bilbao do a really good turn as well. And then still Damiano Caruso there quite late on. They did everything right.
That raises a question in my... I know it's a tricky one there. But my impression in this Tour de France was that Jumbo-Visma, not only were they the strongest team, they were also the most clever team. Because unlike... I'm not saying Team Sky in the old days were not clever. But, I mean, as I said before, on the stages when they didn't have to do the job, they didn't do it. And saved some energy for the real fights. And today, I'm sure they were very happy to see Baron McLaren doing well. Obviously, some of them were dropped, but in a way, what I can't really figure out about, and I said it before, best position to attack in cycling on track or in the mountain is from behind, and to try, you know, to surprise your opponents. It was clear for two climbs and two of the hardest climbs in the Tour de France that Landa would attack at some point. And maybe the surprise effect he had was that he did not. As I said before, and it kind of favors the guy who's following without it. You know, Miguel Angel Lopez today didn't really need a team. He just followed the two teams, you know, leading the way and surged when he found it appropriate. So it almost kind of invalidates the idea that you should lead the way up the mountain with your leader on your wheels.
There's no point Jumbo-Visma arm wrestling Bahrain McLaren for the front of the pack if Bahrain McLaren are going to set a pace that suits them. Absolutely. The difficulty is, what's the alternative? I mean, if Bahrain McLaren didn't ride, Jumbo-Visma would have ridden, and they would have chosen
pace. We've complained a lot in the past that, you know, nobody was kind of attacking or taking over from Team Sky. Not to complain now that the teams are trying to contest the hierarchy. But maybe there are other ways, and I think that the probably the ways to tackle a dominant team is, you know, it's surprising. If you look at the stage wins in this Tour de France, Hirschi, Kemna, even Miguel Angel Lopez, or Pogacar in the taxi, they do it almost like on the track. You're trying to be the guy, you know, at the back, attacking just at the right time. It was more in this cat and mouth game. I think Mice have won.
I'm reminded, though, of one of the great lines in Tim Crabbe's book, The Rider, when somebody at the roadside shouts at him in the race to go faster, and he says, you know, what a fool, thinking that road racing is about going faster. A lot of it is about bluff and about being in control, and I think today was, and as you say, Lionel, it is probably a rehearsal for something in the future, but it's about being in control and asserting yourself. And, you know, in road racing, that can be quite effective. You know, if you come in acting like the boss, then other people treat you like the boss.
Yeah, the good thing about today, that in the end, apart from Superman, the guy who emerged as the real Superman of this Tour de France was Roglic. I mean, he was not affected by any of the tactics. He really rode like a Tour de France champion. Like, you know, he tried to go for the stage win. When he saw he couldn't do it, he climbed, you know, at his own pace, controlled Pogacar and did more than control him. It took just a little amount of time that'll be crucial in Paris. I was a little bit doubtful after he struggled a little bit against Pogacar in the recent mountain stage. But this time he was really in command and is undoubtedly the boss.
Just the last point on the way that these stages tend to go with the all the GC riders are wearing handcuffs basically, and the time
what
the well, not literally,
what a revelation
not literally,
this is
Richard. Listen, hear me out. And the time gap to the leader determines how tight those handcuffs are. So Pogacar's in the tightest.
Pogacar got his behind his back.
He's
like
got
a ski
one arm
jumper.
Behind his back. Yeah, he's got the tightest handcuffs. Miguel Angel Lopez's are a little bit looser, and so on and so on. And that dictates how much freedom you've got. So when Lopez went, the reaction from Roglic wasn't as strong as if Pogacar had gone. And so Roglic is just calculating. That's okay. What am I going to lose from here to the finish to Miguel Angel Lopez? Not much. So you don't really see what the reaction would be if Pogacar had been able to go. The difficulty is for Pogacar is he knows that if he makes that move, goes in too far into the red, and then Roglic is suddenly on his back wheel, he's suddenly very vulnerable. And then Lopez or whoever, you know, capitalizes on that. So it's a constant calculation.
A word about Pogacar. Well, we recognize, you know, Lopez has been Superman in this stage, and Roglic being the boss in this Tour de France. But Pogacar, well, at least he has two great consolation prizes. He's got the Poncho jersey and the white jerseys, and there are two, you know, really well garments I'm sure he'd be proud to wear in Paris if he can afford better. But today he was touching in a way, by you know, all of them were touching because he was so hard in it. But you know, he's got a very juvenile face, and you could see he was trying his best and just couldn't, you know, there was a time he was reaching his limits and realizing how hard it is. When we often ask ourselves, has this guy got limits? You know, he's so young and going so fast, and you could see him, you know, with Roglic kind of pulling away gently, that, you know, he was trying and coming back, and you know, and there was lots of innocence in the way he was attacking and trying to follow the pace. And well, credits to him as well, beaten today, but yeah, what a great ride.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
The Watt Bike Atom sponsors our Tour de France coverage this year, and today we're going to hear more from current Watford and former Manchester United and England goalkeeper Ben Foster. Smelling salts for Lionel, please.
Over lockdown, I spent basically the whole of that kind of trying to really nail my cycling and get as strong as I could. And the improvement from the start of lockdown to the end of it was pretty stark, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, you know, I was happily sitting on the watt bike, sort of just keeping like an average watt of like something like 300 for an hour, kind of, which would never sort of been attainable for me. But it does go to show that if you practice something and you really know what you're doing and you look at the finer details, you can really improve on it. You know, I think my average PEZ score is about sort of just over 70, really. I get 70, sort of 71, 72. So I'm pretty efficient, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. But yeah, I do. I absolutely love it. I think that's another massive draw for me is the numbers. You know, there's no hiding, there's no lying, there's no getting away from it. You know, you look at the numbers, they're all there in front of you while you're riding live in front of you. And that way you can really sort of nail it in and dial it in. And like I say, even afterwards kind of thing, you're always pouring through the data, looking at it, looking at what you did, what you held for a certain amount of time. And that for me is a massive draw.
Well, there we are. Ben Foster, more accustomed to keeping clean sheets, but can also show people a clean set of heels on the bike.
I knew there was a pun coming there.
Well, the Wattbike Atom is available now from £90 per month from wattbike.com. That's wattbike.com.
Well, the other great event today was the sale of Stacey Snyder's second batch of mugs, cups and beer cups. And as per usual, they sold out in less than 10 minutes. It happens every time. The appetite for her beautiful ceramics is limitless, it seems. Thank you very much to all of you who managed to get one. Sorry if you didn't manage to get one. The money from the sales goes to two good causes, in this case the Pichun in Toulouse, we heard from them last night in last night's episode, and the Joyriders in London. So I'm sure they'll be delighted. And thank you to Stacey for all her hard work and organizing, making and posting out the mugs, cups and beer cups. And if you didn't manage to get one, we're very sorry, but we will do it again, of course. Well, actually, before we get on to Richard Carapaz, Francois, you know, has been confidently stating all week that Pogacar was going to win the Tour. And then a few minutes ago, I'm sure I heard him say that Roglic definitely going to win the Tour.
Only fools don't change their minds, you know.
So, Richard Carapaz on the attack again, showing his true colours now. You know, we've been kind of, he's been posted missing a few times. He's had a couple of crashes. But again, I mean, like Barry McLaren and Mikel Landa, you would applaud him for his courage, his resilience, his never say die attitude today. He was away in a big break with some strong riders. And as it started to come back and as he looked like being caught, he kind of pulled away again. It was interesting. The gap really closed down when Bilbao was on the front. You know, he's a great climber. Caruso, I think when he came to the front, the pace went out of that chase a little bit. But Carapaz, at one moment, I thought he might hold on, and it was a barnstorming performance from him.
Well, especially when you consider he'd been out in front nearly all day. I mean, bar about 25 kilometres of it. Well, he's first over the top of the Madeleine, as I said. He looked great on the climb, and then it looked his best when it was at its steepest, out of the saddle. Looked like a Grand Tour champion, and, you know, we'll see more of him in the Grand Tours next year, no doubt. It was reasonably close as well, wasn't it? I mean, I say that. Actually, it took about 25 minutes for them to do the last 4 or 5 kilometres, didn't it? It was that steep. And the perfect response for them after, you know, what must have been a few disappointing days.
Well, it's kind of a reply to people thinking that Team Ineos are finished, you know. When you see what Carapaz is capable of doing, when you see what Adam Yates, who will be with them next season.
Well, Ineos 2021 have got fourth and fifth on GC at the moment.
Absolutely, he's capable of doing. We know they've got young, up-and-coming, you know, riders, Sousa, what's the name, Ghana. I mean, I really can't see, you know, the lineup of Team Ineos, you know, losing quality. Maybe the problem was on top of the crashes and the health problems they had, that, you know, despite what Dave Bradford is saying, the lineup of this tour was too incoherent or too, you know, patchy. I mean, you know, there were holes in there. It didn't feel like a real unit. And Carapaz probably didn't know what his role was. We knew he crashed as well. But was he number two? You know, was he there to help Bernal? I mean, and he showed once Bernal went that, you know, that probably his talent that has been wasted in this Tour de France in many ways.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. If you want 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code Francois.
SISCP25.
That's the one, SISCP25, and thanks once again to Science and Sport. Roglic extended his lead today.
Well,
is he going to win the Tour de France?
That was my question at the start. I mean, we already, I'm feeling very smug because I said Miguel Angel Lopez would finish third when we were asked that question in the press conference, and I think I'm pretty confident in that now. He's got a good gap over Richie Porte. The only thing that could scupper that is if he finishes second, I think. But what do you reckon? I mean, I think Roglic has done enough there, even though tomorrow's stage is could be ambushy territory.
Yeah, I spoke to Matt White this morning, and he said that tomorrow's stage is the big danger for Roglic and Jumbo Visma. That's what he thinks. He thinks if anything's going to happen, it'll be tomorrow. I mean, for all my praise of Barry McLaren, maybe they should have held back for tomorrow. Maybe they'll go again tomorrow. Who knows?
Well, just before we talk about today's GC changes, you're right. I mean, tomorrow is a real kind of dog's tooth of a stage, isn't it? The Corme de Roseland's on there. Then there's a couple of smaller climbs, and the Col de Sesi, the Col des Aravis, famous names. And then, of course, the Plateau du Glière, which is a modern classic, a little bit of gravel for them. And then even that's not finished because there's a little bump at the end that's not even categorised. And it's difficult control and slash chasing territory. So a lot will depend on whether a break goes on that first climb. And one thing we haven't seen in this tour really very much of is a hard, properly hard climb early in the stage. The other day, a lot of flat and then the climbing. Today, reasonably flat and then the two big climbs at the end. So it's another kind of change of pace, a different type of problem for Jumbo-Visma to control, perhaps.
This sort of long mountain stages with lots of climbs, which are the classic alpine stages in the Tour de France, are usually the ones teams control the best, you know, because they set the pace in the first climb, they set the pace. That's when they need to be at the front. Whereas today, maybe because, as we said, it was more a man-to-man race at the finish, it was probably less important to be to ride as a team, even though, if you look at the result, Jumbo-Visma were the best team in the climb too, because with Sepp Kuss finishing fourth, I think, and Tom Dumoulin finishing 10th, they were, again, you know, were really strong as a team. I really can't see how they could be surprised or upset tomorrow, to be honest.
I think it's more the fact that there's a lot more climbing kilometres to control that pace, whereas today it was just you've got to ride the Madeleine and then you've got to ride the final climb and then leave it to Roglic at the end. It could just be slightly different if they've got to use up people earlier on in the stage.
I would be surprised to see Baron McLaren back in the lead tomorrow, because as we saw today, probably Mikel Landa felt great in the morning, and looking back just a little bit about the Carapaz, sudden, making a little bit of a gap in the finale again. Maybe Damiano Caruso slowed down because Landa was unwell and told him so. Will Landa recover? I can't see any other teams leading the way tomorrow. I mean, Pogacar hasn't got a team. Astana for Lopez, what for? He's won his stage today. He's carefully, he's comfortably in the podium for now. I may be totally wrong, but I think it'll be one, not easy one, of course, but the one that Jumbo-Visma should be controlling, well, not easily, but should normally be controlled. The question, as Roglic won the Tour, I think leads us almost straight away to the final time trial. I think that's the main thing now, and the main question mark. And I think Richie Porte has always been a good time trialist on the flat. He's climbing very well, especially on this kind of like La Planche de Bellefille. All this, that same type of climbs, he's been doing very well in this Tour de France. I'm not saying he can take back a minute and a half.
No, but this stage is made for him, and if he can just chip away at that, with get a few seconds of Lopez, I think the podium is a possibility for him. Because Lopez is very erratic in time trials, certainly. Okay, there's a big climb at the end of it, but I mean, you remember Lopez last year, sometimes he can lose minutes in time trials, and there's quite a decent bit of flat before we get to the climb in the time trials.
And
if he
senses that he's lost a minute on the flat and suddenly panics and goes overboard,
his head will fall off.
But anyway, this is deep into speculation territory. What we can talk about...
A minute cushion looks to me, well, really good enough now for Roglic, given the strength he showed today, given the strength of the team, unless something really unexpected happens. Well, it looks to me really ideally placed. I really can't see, apart from, as I say, an accident. I think he's, if you look at the way they've been building... you know, in a kilometer zero by Jumbo Visma, you recall, you know, that how they build their project, you know, gradually to get to this, and in a kind of summary of this of the project, the way they built the you know, the rise of Roglic to the top of the standings, and now to the top of the Col de la Loze, and possibly to the win of the Tour de France, has been methodical and really well done.
Well, that was a spoiler alert, because tomorrow's kilometer zero is a look at Jumbo Visma and Roglic. There's an interview in there with Richard Pluger, who runs the team, and has been there, well, since Rabobank pulled out, and has built something over many years. So I spoke to him the other day. We hear from him, we hear from Sepp Kuss, we hear from Matt White, Dan Martin, Rod Ellingworth about Jumbo Visma, and we hear also from Dave Brailsford about the Jumbo Visma team at this year's tour. That's tomorrow's Kilometer Zero, powered by Zwift.
And if you want to keep up with our audio diarist as well, go back and listen to the previous episodes of Kilometer Zero. Very speculation heavy final part of tonight's podcast. So just to ground it back in some facts here, Rigoberto Urán has slipped three places further down the GC, now sits in sixth place. Without really anyone noticing, Alejandro Valverde is up to 10th. I mean, he is riding a la Zubeldia.
You know, Mas and Valverde from Movistar rode a sort of, they did the anti-Barry McLaren thing of just kind of ghosting in. I mean, you know, that's not to disrespect the huge effort required to finish up there on a stage like today. But, you know, they haven't tried to take the race on in the way that Barry McLaren did today.
Giving Movistar and its predecessors about its 100th team classification title in Grand Tours, I suspect they're going to win the team classification.
Yeah, they're still in the lead, you know, very close call against Jumbo Visma, I think 30 seconds. But, you know, you end up
30 minutes.
30 minutes. Yeah.
The gaps in the gaps are quite big.
That's right.
Lotus Sudal are 12 hours, 23 minutes behind. I can't see them snatching victory on Paris.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of racing still to be done.
Yeah. you end up wondering if that's not their main goal, even Grand Tours, for the past
perhaps
decade.
If they can clone Thomas de Gendt and get him in the break on Friday by an hour. Nairo Quintana has also slipped another five places down and is in 15th place, so now being overtaken by Warren Barguil, his teammate. It's not been a good few days for Quintana, suffering from the effects of that earlier crash, of course. But there we are, Roglic or Pogacar. I think it's a done deal. I don't want to switch people off, but
tilted today, as you say, Francois. It was nice to see that fight at the end, and it was a real kind of raw test of, you know, where riders are, where their ability is. And I think, you know, we saw Lopez win. Daniel talks a lot about altitude and about the importance of riders' ability to perform at altitude, and Lopez has perhaps a bit of an advantage there coming from high altitude in Colombia. But behind him, it was probably a pretty accurate, you know, representation of where the two are. And there was a moment where I thought Pogacar was going to come back to Roglic. It was a hard climb, I think, to judge, and that made it all the more interesting. So a great addition to the Tour de France this year, that climb. It looked stunning, it looked beautiful, spoiled by a few fans, unfortunately, but I'm sure we will be back here. And I'm sure we will be back here.
Is it time for a couple of surprises?
I'm less sure about that, but we've got our surprises to look forward to. What have we had a look at the menu yet, chaps?
Well, if it surprises you, they won't tell you what it is, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's the idea, isn't it?
No prices on the menu, Richard, so it must be really cheap.
Right, well, let's go, shall we?
This could be the most catastrophic budgeting disaster for the cycling podcast since I let you choose the wine in Israel.
Oh, dear. Oh, well. Well, let's go and eat. Thank you, Lionel.
Thanks, Richard.
Oh, before we go, sorry, I always forget, but we've got some friends of the podcast to thank. From me, a big thank you to Mr. Duncan Mason, Charles Huntley, Mr. Jay Moffat, Paul Wood, Mr. B.D. Wollstonecroft, and Gary Patterson. I'm sure that's Gary Patterson, who I know very well. I used to race with. Lovely guy who won the Sam Robinson Memorial in 1998. after, in fact, almost being pushed over the line by me. So I still remember that, Gary.
And we're not surprised. And, we're not surprised at all.
Thank you very much for being a friend of the podcast.
He's not a friend of yours, but he's a friend of the
podcast. He is a friend of mine.
And a big thank you to Scott Sapi, Alfie Jones, Ross Wingrove, Josh Blamier, Paul Murphy, and Chris Jackson.
Big thanks to David Collins, Robert Duffy, Victoria Jack, Mark Edward, Melina Johansson, and Andrew Mathewson.